Building an attractive and useful site is no guarantee that it will foster a community. People are disillusioned with sites that are too prescriptive. Sites that try to sell products or push out thinly veiled marketing messages are not going to cut it. Even sites that are considered to offer the very best web experience today will inevitably fall behind. And there will be plenty of opportunities to improve. Just like the early days of the web, we are witnessing an explosion of creative ideas. Some will work, but some will fail to build that community. This is Cliff Sarin on ComputerWeekly.com podcasts, where you can listen to and download interviews with leading experts on key topics of IT management and technology. Today I am speaking to Don Tapscott, whose new book, Wikinomics: How Mass Collaboration Changes Everything, explores the new age of the internet, where the community is key. I caught up with Don at Gartner's IT Expo conference to find out why businesses must embrace this new wave of innovation. Don, your new book, Wikinomics, why is it important for businesses to be looking at this now?
Well, there are a bunch of big changes that are happening in the world that are leading to a very fundamental change in the corporation and in how companies innovate and compete. We have the new web, or the so-called Web 2.0, which is very different than the internet of the dot-com period. It's essentially pervasive, broadband, ubiquitous, geospatial, multimedia, services-oriented computing. We've got a new generation of young people that have grown up bathed in bits. And these kids are different. They watch less TV, and they've grown up interacting, and they process information differently. And as they come into the workforce and the marketplace, they're a big force for change. Put those two together, you get a social revolution of so-called social networking, with MySpace growing at 375 million new registrants a day, and they come together to create an economic revolution, really, that the corporation, the way that we orchestrate capability in society is changing fundamentally.
It's one of the things that you mentioned in the book is how content is being created by the web users themselves, rather than in the old web, where content was created by the owners of websites. Sites like Flickr, it's up to the individuals to load up their pictures, to put up their own content. How does that fit in?
Well, I think you articulated it pretty well. And in the case of Flickr, I put a picture of my Bernese mountain dog puppy there, and they asked me to name the picture. In technical terms, they're asking for an XML tag. So I create the tag, and I call my Bernese Mountain Dog a Bernese Mountain Dog. And when you let people self-organize to create their own content, they're pretty good at it. So all of a sudden, I'm in this place with 934 other Bernese Mountain Dog owners, and I'm finding out why my puppy eats sticks and has diarrhea and so on. But essentially, when I do that, when I put this data on there and give it metadata describing the data, I'm programming the internet. I'm participating in the creation of this giant global computer called the web. And that means that people can now self-organize in ways that were previously unthinkable. So I banned the term website from my company. We don't build websites. We create an online presence whereby people can content collaborate, where they can co-innovate with us.
One of the examples that you mentioned was Lego, and I found that quite fascinating, how a company decided that it would not close its application programming interfaces and allow people to develop applications. Why did that work?
Well, basically, Lego adopted the principles of Wikinomics. They, in the case of their in several cases, actually, the one that we've discussed in the book is around Lego Mindstorms, where kids actually create robots using Lego technology. And this involves software, but because kids know so much about software, they hacked the code and created a website and started sharing all these Mindstorm applications. So Lego had a choice. It could be like the music industry and decide to sue the children, which they didn't. Or they could open the whole thing up, and they did that, and there are now thousands of young people who are co-innovating value for Lego. So that's an example of what we call prosumption in Wikinomics. Consumers can become producers or prosumers. And this is an exciting new time when you get to harness the genius of your own customers to co-create products and services with you.
Greater collaboration is also something that's driving Wikinomics. And one of the examples that you mentioned was Boeing, comparing that to the way an aircraft would traditionally have been created. What do you think was the value in how the latest Boeing 787 was created?
Well, Boeing did a very radical thing when they were conceiving their new Boeing Dreamliner, the new generation jumbo jet. They concluded that the old model wasn't going to work. The old model was all about a hierarchy in a supply chain. You know, the best people are inside the boundaries of your company, and they create a spec that could be 20, 30,000 pages. Then they put it out to the supply chain, and the supply chain bids on it, and you beat them up, and then get their price down, and then they provide the stuff, and you assemble it in your factory. Boeing said, we're not going to treat you people as suppliers, because you're more than that. You're peers, and you've got all kinds of good ideas. And if we peer produce this aircraft, it's going to be better. So what they did is they put out a 20-page document, rather than thousands of pages, just saying, here's what we're trying to achieve with this aircraft. And I'll tell you, they built this mind-boggling global ecosystem. And the new 787 Dreamliner is a fabulous aircraft. Back orders are really strong. And the Airbus competitor that was done in the old way, well, some people say it may never come to market. It's not that mass collaboration is a better way, it may be the only way.
And of course, we're seeing that also in China. You mentioned the Chinese motorcycle industry. They won't have a Harley-Davidson, but they're going to be one of the biggest manufacturers.
The Chinese motorcycle industry is built on a completely different model, and because there's no OEM, there's no company. It's pulling it all together, and it's not a government either. It's a bunch of little companies, hundreds of them. They each make a part. I don't want to over-glamorize it. They're knocking off parts to Japanese bikes, basically. But they each make a part, and then they, or parts, and they get together in tea houses and on the internet, and they figure out how these things will go together. And then somebody does marketing, and someone does service, and somebody does support, and somebody collects the money. There's no equivalent of a Yamaha or a Harley-Davidson. There's no OEM pulling all the strings. Now, this is not just a big motorcycle industry. This is the largest motorcycle industry in the world. And it's built on a completely different model than the model of the corporation and the rest of the world. So get ready for the automobile from China, done the same way. Probably cost $1,500.
Now, that changes the way we think about manufacturing and think about our supply chain. Moving the questions to IT, what should our CIOs be looking to do?
All of this poses a big issue, I guess, for every CIO, is what's going to be my role? If it's true that the corporation and its deep structures and architectures are changing fundamentally because of IT, then what role will I play in that transformation? And I see senior IT execs bifurcating, basically. Some of them say, I'm going to be the best infrastructure provider and the best plumber in the world. And others saying, no, this is a business transformation. I need to step up to this. And I think about people like Glenn Renwick at Progressive Insurance, who is the CIO and is now the CEO of a company. It's a company based on effective use of information technology and the web. So this is a huge leadership turning point for any senior IT exec. They really need to sort out what their role is going to be.
There's also an opportunity for the CIO to provide the leadership to say, let's take this business into the 21st century, into Web 2.0, looking at things like the supply chain, looking at the opportunities, and driving the company's business strategy. Do you think the CIO is in a position to do that?
This is one of those, the future is not something to be predicted, it's something to be achieved. And for those CIOs that are oriented to do that, and not all are, their company can be very thankful because we need leadership, basically, for this transformation. And it always happens when you get a paradigm shift. You get a leadership crisis. Vested interests fight against change, and leaders of the old paradigm have great difficulty embracing the new. So the IT executive is ideally suited often because they're sort of at that intersection of the business and information technology. And they can and have historically shown in many cases to be real leaders for transformation. But the starting point is that any IT exec that wants to be a leader needs to be using this technology themselves. They should have a blog, they should be using wikis, they should be using social networks, they get onto MySpace or something like that. They should be uploading their photos onto all these cool sites that exist in Europe for geospatial sharing of photos. And the best thing you can do is probably talk to your teenager, get them to show you about this whole new world, and so you can transfer that to your own company.
I suppose one other thing that they could be doing is making better use of open source and understanding the open source philosophy.
Well, think about it. There are 150,000 open source application projects. Boy, you spend 10 million euros building an application where you could have got it for free. You're doing a real disservice to your company. Now, a lot of this stuff is not robust. It's not enterprise ready, but either was Linux. But it is now. And companies like SpikeSource are doing hundreds of thousands of tests every night on these many open source applications to find out when they're ready and when they're right for prime time, documenting them, providing service and so on for them. So you've got ideagoras like topcoder.com, 100,000 programmers available on the internet to help you. There are new communities like Cambrian House, which is crowdsourced software. Every one of these is a different model on how software gets developed, but all of them are becoming very interesting for any IT exec.
And also, open source doesn't necessarily have to apply just to software development. You've mentioned some examples in the book of open source product design, open source research.
The whole peer production model can be applied to many parts of the economy. There are sort of peer-produced mutual funds, like marketocracy.com. You're seeing the early stages of peer-produced banks, where there's no bank. You know, it's just a bunch of peers that come together on the web and can do financial transactions like lend each other money. Zopa.com would be a good example of that. Then you have ideagoras like Innocentive. These are 90,000 chemists that are in countries all around the world. And when Procter & Gamble is looking for a new molecule that'll take red wine off a shirt, they don't go to their own internal people to develop the molecule. The internal people, the first thing they'll do is look outside and see if someone on Innocentive or another ideagora could develop this molecule. And there are 9,000 chemists inside the boundaries of P&G and over a million outside that they can get to now. So you do the math. I mean, where is it more likely the molecule will be found? The uniquely qualified mind to do something for your company, chances are it's outside the company. If you can harness these new markets for innovation. So someone comes up with a molecule and they may, you know, be in Manchester or a grad student or a retired chemist living in Dublin. But they come up with a molecule and P&G pays them $100,000. P&G will have half of its innovations come from outside the company by the end of this year. Big change in how companies innovate.
And finally, if there's one piece of advice that you would give business leaders regarding Wikinomics, what would that be?
In addition to buying copies and giving them to all of your employees, I would suggest the following, that you talk to some young people and listen to them and learn from young people and children. My company, New Paradigm, is actually doing a $4 million research project on this, where we're interviewing 11,000 youngsters in countries all around the world. And this is the first time in human history when children actually know more about something than adults, something that's really important. I was an authority on model trains when I was a kid. These kids were authorities on this big revolution that's changing every institution in society. So engage young people, talk to them, learn from them, And of course, there are many, many other recommendations that we make in the book, but for a closing thought, I'll give you one that no one would predict I would have said. So there you go.
Thank you, Don, and thank you for listening. If you are interested in Web 2.0, you may want to look at my new blog at www.computerweekly.com/blogs/IT-FUD-blog.